Money FM 89.3, the best of your money.
When a narcissist loses money, it can be a real threat to their sense of control. Today, a very, very special guest is here with me. I am thrilled to introduce you to the clinical psychologist who's made a huge impact. She probably saves lives because of her YouTube channel. Dr. Ramani Durvasula is one of my favorite teachers. Her fourth book is out. It's called It's Not You, Identifying and Healing from Narcissistic People. She's a world expert. Dr. Ramani, thank you so much for joining us here in Singapore. Welcome.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you, Michelle, for having me and welcoming me to Singapore. I'm so grateful.
You speak with such sensitivity and depth about a difficult topic on a whole range of videos on your YouTube sites and on podcasts. I'm curious, how did this particular area, you're a clinical psychologist, how did this particular area come to define your work?
You know, it was such a long sort of circuitous story to get here. I can't say it was any one thing. I started by getting interested in research in this work as a university professor here for many, many years. So that's where I sort of got into it. But I was also noticing that people were coming into my private practice and they kind of kept talking about the same sort of relationship over and over again, manipulation, invalidation, nothing they could do is ever right. And by the time they came into my office, for years, they had been trying to change themselves. And it dawned on me, the way they were describing their partners, the text messages they were showing me, everything, they were very likely dealing with someone who had a narcissistic personality. So when I really dug into it, what I noticed was, what we were very busy doing was always making excuses for the narcissistic people and blaming and shaming the people who are being harmed in these relationships. Toughen up, you know, figure it out. Relationships are hard, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's why the title of your book, I think, speaks to this effort. It's not you. And this can be so important. People in marriages, dating, a boss in a relationship with a boss who's a narcissist, the book validates the survivor. I want to back up a little bit. You know, you talked about seeing a lot of people suffering in these relationships in your clinical practice. People often ask, you know, is narcissism on the rise, or are we just a lot more aware of the common narcissistic traits, grandiosity, superiority, entitlement, this lack of empathy? What do you think?
I think there's a couple of things happening at the same time. Narcissism's always been around. People say, is this a new thing? No, it's not a new thing. Open a history book. Anyone who's ever been written about in history, it was probably narcissistic. I think people who have been domineering and cruel and manipulative, I think, have always been a part of history.
Is a narcissist someone with a fragile ego or a huge ego?
Both. So I think that's the challenge. The narcissistic person has both a fragile ego and a big ego. And the big ego is meant to be sort of a compensation of the fragile ego. So the fragile ego brings up a lot of shame for the narcissistic person. They're, in order for them to get the validation and admiration that they need to seem perfect and larger than life to the world. So they have to sell that message. And when that message isn't sold, or people don't give them the admiration or validation, or things don't go the way they want, that fragile sense comes up. But instead of being vulnerable with it, they scream at anyone who made them feel fragile. How dare you? Or you're competitive with me, or you're just jealous, or you're a terrible person, or whatever they say to someone because something tripped them up. But the huge ego, in essence, is a counterweight to the fragile ego. In a healthy person, the ego is the ego, right? We know who we are. We know what we're about. We know we're not, none of us are perfect, that we make mistakes, that we can make amends, that we can try harder. That kind of middle space. In fact, I once read this fantastic quote that said, you know, it would, you know, the worst fate for a narcissist, I'm twisting it, but the worst fate for a narcissistic person is to feel as though that they're ordinary. And so that to be ordinary is to be imperfect. To be ordinary is that every day isn't a big holiday in our honor, and that every, you know, we don't live this big Instagram life.
She's Dr. Ramani Durvasula. We're talking about her new book that's out. It's called It's Not You, Identifying and Healing from Narcissistic People. World expert in the field of narcissism, Dr. Ramani Durvasula joins us live. I'll put some of your questions in as well, listeners that have come my way on this topic. Dr. Ramani, you know, I had a brush with a narcissist over the weekend. It was so bad I had to write to the institution involved, and you know, know, now this person is reaching out, trying to have a clarifying conversation with me, which I'm not looking forward to, because I know what my version of reality is, and I'm not looking forward to having to defend or deal with any other version that's coming my way. So my question is, why is it that narcissists seek to gaslight or heap doubt on another person's sense of reality? Why is that a persistent trait that we see?
I don't think that they're necessarily trying to destabilize. I don't think that that's an intentional thing for the narcissistic person. I think what they want to do is maintain power and control, and destabilizing the other person is probably the quickest way to do it. There's an almost delusional sense of rightness for the narcissistic person. I must be the one who's right. I have it all figured out. So because of that, they will defend that till the very end. They live in only their version of events. And so your experience actually is very interesting to hear it, that they want an opportunity to clear the waters, which really is an opportunity to double down on their reality. And if I was guiding you through something like this, Michelle, I would say to you, you want to be prepared. You want notes. You want, and not to like pull the paper out and throw it in their face, but so you feel very, very clear on exactly what happened. Because many people will say that in these conversations, narcissistic people are so skilled at gaslighting, at denying our experience, our memories, our perceptions, even reality, and then telling us that there's something wrong with us, that it's very easy to sort of feel off balance. And so to kind of almost weight ourselves down so we don't feel off balance, it's really revisiting it and making notes and being very clear. Now you can see though, Michelle, how this doesn't work in an interpersonal relationship. You can't walk around with a notebook all the time. In a work situation, it's more possible. But very, very often, too, the other struggle when you're in one of these experiences with a narcissistic person is that they don't take responsibility or accountability. They won't take the stance of, oh, I can see how we both had different experiences of that, or I understand why I understand what you're saying. No. It's, I'm right, you're wrong, and we'll often blame you, like, oh, you're just inexperienced, so that's why you don't understand, or you're just not that good at this, or you're too new to this, or whatever way they would use to minimize the other person in the conversation. Again, if that feels at all plausible. So, for example, if any of us ever go into these conversations feeling a little insecure, that feels believable. And so it further sort of destabilizes us when we're in a weakened position, which is why these conversations are often pointless, and the narcissistic person's version of an apology is things like, well, I'm sorry you felt that way. That's not an apology.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely not. If that's telling me there's something wrong with my experience, that's more gaslighting.
Most normal people walk into a clarifying conversation with a sense of empathy, because most people are willing to hear the other person out. Is your empathy working against you when you are trying to deal with a very difficult situation with a narcissist?
Yeah, you bring up a really important point here, that sometimes the very best parts of ourselves, our empathy, our compassion, our respect, and our kindness, end up getting sort of weaponized against us, right? Because of our empathy, we're able to hold space for another person's point of view, that we are, we want to say, well, I want to hear their point of view. It's not fair for me to think I'm the only one who thinks this. And I think that remains an important gift we have. But in addition to that, I'm not saying people need to lose their empathy. I'm saying alongside your empathy has to be the willingness to understand that their position, that of gaslighting, of manipulation, of shutting you down, is not okay, that behavior is unacceptable. And you can have empathy for someone and also judge their behavior to be unacceptable. It's tense and it's hard to do, but more than one thing can be true at the same time.
What is your strategy that you talk about in this book briefly for dealing with narcissists? You say don't go deep, right?
Yeah, so don't go deep stands for don't defend, engage, explain, or personalize. One of the problems with narcissistic encounters is we waste a lot of time explaining our point of view as though they're listening, right? You got to remember, with a narcissistic person, they have they have one view of a situation, and it's their view. They feel entitled to that view. And when you're giving this long, elegant defense and explanation and all this other stuff, they're not listening. In fact, the best example I can give is many people who have been in narcissistic relationships will say, you know what? I'm going to write it down. I'm going to put it all in a long email or a long text message. And maybe if they're not interrupting me or something, they'll read the whole thing and it'll make sense. No, it won't. They're not, whether you write it in the sky, whether you sing it, whether you say it, they're not listening because they've got their version and they ain't budging. And so people can really almost drive themselves mad at constantly trying to kind of get into the mud with a narcissistic person. And a key part of the sort of radical acceptance is learning to disengage, is to step back. I'm not saying to be passive aggressive. I'm not saying the silent treatment, but I am saying to not bring as much of your psychological self into the relationship. We can't step away from all of the narcissistic relationships in our lives. In some cases, we have to keep working with narcissistic people. In some cases, these are family members we can't step away from. But we have to understand that the rules of engagement are different, that this is a person who really is putting their welfare before ours. They aren't listening to us. They do think they know better than us on everything, including about ourselves. They are always going to put us in a secondary position. So as a result of that, knowing that, we can be much more careful in how we share ourselves with them. And you'd be amazed, even though you're disengaged with someone, you can still talk about the weather and have sort of superficial conversations. But I think many of us turn to these narcissistic relationships as places that we believed were full of trust and depth, and they weren't. And that can be a really harsh wake-up call when we realize the sort of permanent limitations of these relationships.
No, it can feel really devastating when you realize that you're working with a narcissist, because there is this asymmetry of power. There's a dependence on the relationship so that you can get your job done, for example. How can anyone listening in work with a narcissist? It's part of the self-defense package, you know, just having to heap compliments on the narcissist or pander to their insecurities?
You can do the pandering to their insecurities and complimenting part for only so long. That's a short-term strategy. So if, let's say, there is something you need to get done, like a deadline, what you might find is, we need to get this done. The only thing important is getting this done. And if this means complimenting them to get their signature or something, then we're going to do it. But day in and day out, it feels like we lose our authenticity. In fact, some people will say, I sort of feel sick at always having to sort of engage with them in this way. So a lot of people will say that's not really a viable long-term strategy. But we many times do need to work with narcissistic people. And that opens up a whole different kind of a conversation than it does in close relationships, because we don't tend to love the people we work with. We don't feel attached to them the same way. But they can be. I mean, work is where we spend most of our waking hours. So again, it's about having realistic expectations, understanding that this person is going to put themselves ahead of the work, ahead of us. They may actually take credit for our work. They may be speaking badly about us to other people. And I tell folks, nowhere is it more important than at work that you document, and not just document your interactions with the narcissistic person, but also the work you're doing, so that there's a very clear record of what you've done, where you were, what you're responsible for. Because the narcissistic person will be the first who would be willing to twist the truth of those matters. So if these things are documented, you'll be saying, no, actually, here's the initial version of the document, which I wrote, for example, or here are my sales totals, and these are the sales I closed this month. So unfortunately, it creates more work when you work with a narcissistic person. You also have to be very careful with trust around these things, because you may very well think you're sharing some lighthearted after-work gossip, and that can get twisted into something that is used against you. They may turn other colleagues against you in the workplace. They may get into closer relationships with people more powerful in the organization, which works against you. So it can really, really make for a very fraught, manipulative, unsafe workplace. In the long term, it's really not viable to make it in a workplace full of narcissistic people. You'll never get advanced. Your work will never get recognized. I mean, that's the reality. But in the short term, not all of us have the luxury of just leaving our jobs. So we do have to figure out how to communicate. And once again, don't go deep. Don't defend, don't engage, don't explain, don't personalize, and document everything.
Great advice, Dr. Romani, especially for our listeners dealing with the situation at work. In the midst of documenting, in the midst of not personalizing, somehow we have to be able to stand strong, and that involves self-regulation. I wonder if you can share, when dealing with a narcissist, how can we stay in control of how we think, how we reason, how we act?
So you bring up something very interesting here, Michelle. A lot of people who've been in long-term narcissistic relationships are actually prone to over-regulating themselves, right? They overthink everything. They're very careful about everything. Like, I got to make sure I say this exactly the right way so it can't get misconstrued, and I cover every point so my reality can't get doubted. I mean, being in these relationships makes people very vigilant about how they communicate. But I think what you're trying to get at is, how do we stay in touch with our own sense of reality? How do we not get pulled into the reality system of the narcissistic person? And this is where social support becomes everything. Because once you recognize that you're in a narcissistic relationship, you need spaces in your life that are safe, with voices that are validating, that are attuned, that mirror you, that see you sort of clearly. That becomes absolutely essential. And the way that we can create that is by building, you know, we spend so much time trying to appease the narcissist and win the narcissist over and have them notice us. That's all time wasted, because we're never going to achieve that. It's really about cultivating those healthy spaces, because if we have those, then we have places to go to where we feel seen, where we feel heard, where we're a part of something, where there's two sides to the relationship. And when we have those healthy spaces, we're actually more shored up and stronger when we have to deal with the narcissistic person. We have a sounding board to turn to after we've dealt with, or even before we manage the narcissistic person. This sometimes might even be therapy for people who turn to a therapist and say, am I out of my mind? Like, what is happening here? And be able to talk it out and sort of get that sense of, no, it's not you. Like, this really is a situation where this person is behaving really poorly, is manipulating you, is invalidating you, is gaslighting you, where somebody can really be clear about that. And you can also hear that when you are in the presence of people who see and experience your reality, that you feel more psychologically safe. You feel more whole in your body.
You feel different when you're in a supportive relationship.
Yes.
That reminds you of the you that you used to be before the crazy making. What are some of the tactics that the narcissist uses to maintain control of you?
All kinds of things. So I would say that they will be dismissive, invalidating. They will minimize your pain while saying, well, what's happened to me was so much worse than what happened to you. There will be obviously the gaslighting, that denial of reality and that destabilization. Rage is another way that narcissistic people kind of keep people in position. Most people are actually really put off by rage. And once we recognize someone is capable of rage, we will do what we can to avoid that rage. So we might say less. We might become more quiet. We may hold back. We might try to do things exactly the way they want us to do. So their rage becomes a means of control. The other things they do is they dominate. They will control every detail. They might financially control. They may not give you all of the information. They will shift blame on you. So they will rarely take responsibility, something that you are not at all responsible for. They will blame you. And then that's more gaslighting. You'll say, what? Absolutely, I didn't do that. There will be sort of a demand for perfection, which is impossible, but many times we fall into it and think that that's possible. So we often feel as though we're not enough in these relationships. And these relationships are laden with betrayal. And I don't just mean traditional, like, infidelity betrayal, though that's often present, but it's even things like lying, financial betrayal, sharing your secrets with other people, those sorts of things. So betrayal sort of cuts across these relationships. So they never quite feel safe.
When you thought about putting this book together, you've written three books on narcissism. What did you want to do differently with this one?
I wanted this to be a book about healing. I think that all the books about narcissism are always about the narcissist. And once again, it's all about them, isn't it? And this book was really meant to say, okay, there's a few chapters just to make sure we're on the right page, with the same page as everyone. But the rest of the book is saying there is a life after this, whether you stay in the relationship or not. The other thing I don't like is a lot of the books on narcissistic relationships make it seem like the only path forward is to leave. And that's just not available to everyone. So this is really a book about healing, about sort of excavating yourself from this relationship, whether you stay or you go, through understanding, through radical acceptance that it's not going to change, that it's not your fault, to experience the grief and the loss, and then get to a place where you can be more tactical and slowly give yourself permission to show up as your true and authentic self in safe places and allow your voice to shine in the places where it can, so you're no longer living solely in service to the narcissistic person.
I've watched you over the years, Dr. Romani. I can't tell you how thrilled I've been to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining me here on Money FM 89.3.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me.
She's Dr. Romani Durvasula, sharing more about her new book out. It's called It's Not You, Identifying and Healing from Narcissistic People.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.